As most of you already know, honeybees are very important non-target insects for any pesticides or GMO because it's a major pollinator for our crops. Actually, right now there's a symposium competing with this one on the CCD, and I was there for a little bit. This study was carried in two summers, this 2007 and also the last year, trying to develop a standardized assay. So the question you would first ask is, why do we need an in vitro rearing system? Because you can apply proteins directly into larval cells, this has been done, and then reintroduce the brood into the colony, and you can observe mortality and other parameters. But the problem with that is possible removal by worker bees, and there's also colony environmental differences that could affect the results. So ideally, you would like to have a more controlled setting in evaluating pesticides and GMO proteins in the lab. And to do this, you have to have a standardized lab assay. And this actually, the artificial rearing system is not new. As early as 1987, people have developed an assay. And right before I started my test, I was wondering why, you know, the larval to adult survival was about 75% when first developed, and then it just started going downhill until right now about 50% survival in the control. So I was wondering if there's something wrong with the royal jelly people are using, and there's a new, just while we were trying to develop this, there was a new publication just came out recently. They have a little bit higher survival, about 70%. Comparable to the first one, but still the UCLA variability in different studies, probably because people use different variations and then there's not really a standardized way. So we thought this is a good time to, because of the large demand of the GMO products available in, which should be tested. So this is time for consistent and standardized assay. So basically, we start with this is what's called a basic larva diet. You start with purchased royal jelly. That's about 50%. That's 50% of the total weight. And you add yeast extract, and then the glucose and fructose, and then distilled water to dilute it. And then you can pipette those liquid into the larva. In the old assay that was first developed, they used 10 larvae for the first day and using those tissue culture plates. I'm just showing you pictures so you have a feel when I talk about different testing parameters, variations. And on the third day, they switched to 5 larvae per cell. And then eventually, day 4 to day 6, they use 1 larvae per cell. And then when the larvae defecate, which you can observe the uric acid crystals in the food, and then that indicates the larva has beginning defecation and they're ready to pupate. And we can then clean those larva on clean wipes and transfer them carefully into another set of cells with paper lined. And then they will continue to develop, they will continue to defecate, making those papers into darker color, as you can see. And eventually, they were developing into healthy adults. So the first step in 2006, we tested various variables to see why those studies are having lower and lower mortality and survival. So we tested the basic diet and then add telosin in one treatment, which is an antibiotic. We thought maybe there are American forbid pathogens when you transfer the larva into the dish. And we, in another treatment, we added a vitamin C, thinking maybe the royal jelly, the vitamin C in the royal jelly might be liable, but we did not see any significant difference. And even in the basic diet, as you can see, we had more than 70% survival, even using the old method. So this is good. This probably tells me the variation in the royal jelly quality, and actually I did see one paper that was preprint and they had 20% survival when they used one type of royal jelly in the control. So this tells you there's a wide variation in royal jelly. And then we tested whether transferring larva is really necessary that day to day, because you have to transfer larva each day and maybe that would cause mechanic damage. So we left some larva and transferred in those dishes in the same plate and then just removed the larva food every day. Although there's no statistic difference, this one is a bit high. It gets 80% survival, and those are the sample sizes we have, 96 larva and 96 larva. The error bar represents, we use 24 larva as a replicate, so in other words, this will be three different replicates and just use the mortality average over the three replicates, and an error. And then we tested different feeding regions, trying to vary the amount of food the larva are receiving. So in those one, we give them the same amount of diet, 100 microliters per day. And in another one, we reduce the amount in the second and third day. Sometimes when you are dealing with SBTI, soybean trypsin inhibitor, they are very expensive. So you want to use the minimum amount of diet that's possible to maintain the same survival. But this seems not working. When you try to reduce the diet, the mortality goes down. So you got 60% survival here in the number three, and then in the standard one, we have about 70% survival. Significant difference. In trying to improve that 75-80% survival to even more, we thought maybe the wax plates are not ideal. So the plastic plates are not ideal, so we thought about coating with beeswax in those plates, thinking the natural environment of bees actually in the waxy cells. But contrary to our expectation, the beeswax coated plates actually did much worse. Larva just easily get stuck in those cells because the wax are very sticky, and so we have nearly 80% survival in the non-coated, but below 60% in the wax coated. So based on those parameters, we standardized our assay. So because larva transfer did not improve survival, we did not do any transfer in the future experiments. Antibiotics and vitamin C did not improve survival either, so we did not add this, so because there's more variables. We actually used the region, used this one in 200 and 200 microliters later in the last 3 days, in this year in 207. But there's no difference really between the 100 all the way. But I guess my student thought this would be better. And wax coating reduced survival, so we decided not to do any coating. So we further used this test to see if it would be able to detect any differences for effects of the chemicals in the market, such as E64, and we know that STBI, the soybean trypsin inhibitor, has been published and it has a negative effect on honeybees, so we use that as a positive control to detect any effect. E64, it has this structure, the chemical structure here. It has been tested. I think the next talk will probably talk on this chemical, the effect of it on the plant bug. But the effect of this chemical on honeybees has not been studied. So we used five different treatments. We used BSA as a negative control, it's 2%, and then E64 we used J.J. Duan's publication as a reference, used a very low dose, 0.6% as a high dose, and then 10 times less for the low dose. And STBI, we used 2% as a high dose and then 1% as a low dose. We did not use a blank control, but we know that in the literature that BSA in our diet at 2%, which is 2% of the total protein, not of the total diet weight, did not have any adverse effect. But we went ahead and tested anyway in our system to see, to make sure there's no difference in terms of time to the development to the adults and the emergence weight and the mortality. So here 31 survived and 29 survived out of 48 larva. So there's no significant difference in all the parameters we measured. So This is the data on the effect of E64 on larva and pupa survival, which is the total survival, in other words, from first day larva to adults. The SA has about 82% survival, which is very good, and STBI high, 50% survival, significantly different. This is very similar to Malone reported. She found a 25% reduction, was 2% SBTI, but the control had a 50% survival only. So actually, our assay here is a little bit more sensitive. We have 32% reduction, because probably mainly because our control here has a high survival. And SDPI, low dose at 1%, we still detected a significant difference in reduction of survival. And E64, low and high, those are, the effect seems to be lower than SBTI, high dose, but it is significantly different from the control. Moving to weight of newly emerged workers, this is the one. Another parameter we could measure, even if the bees survive, they could be malnutrition or the sublethal effect have reduced the weight, for example. So BSA here has an average weight of 140 milligrams, and SBT high dose is significantly lower, and the E64 two doses are not significant in this trial. But if we combine, we actually did two trials. Each trial was three different colonies, so we actually have six replicates. If we combine all those, I think we do see a significant difference between the baseline and the E64. Developmental time, we do see SDBI high dose caused about 1 day delay here, but in this particular trial, it's not statistically significant. So in the BSA, we expect a 21-day development time from first day larva to enclosed adults, and sometimes when you have sublethal effects, whether pesticides or BT products, they could delay the development time, which is also not good. But STBI here, I believe if we pull all the results, we'll see a significant effect here. In this particular trial, it's not significant. So in summary, we have developed a standardized test. By modifying previously published procedures, and the average survival we have, it's very good. It's 75 to 85% from first instar larva to adults. Well, maybe we just got lucky. We had a good batch of royal jelly from China. My next step is actually testing different commercial sources of royal jelly and to see if I do expect significant variation among the quality of the royal jelly. Of course, the best way is actually use a totally artificial diet, and I think my lab could be on the right track. I was playing while doing this, playing with some liquid diet, and bees survived for about 5 days, and they died only just before pupation. That was nothing, was no royal jelly, no casein, no yeast extract, just totally known chemical composition, amino acids and stuff. So we plan to test the repeatability of this assay also in different labs during the summer of 2008. So this could be transferred to testing labs in the industry. And finally, E64 showed a weak effect on honeybee survival and developmental time and adult emergence weight, but they're not as strong as SBTI. This is probably congruent with previous study. Of course, it's hard to compare because the STBI we used 2% and the E64 we used 0.06%, so it's difficult to do a direct comparison between those two chemicals. I'd like to thank the ABSTC for funding this research, and Jian Duang for input in experimental design, and constantly prodding me doing more trials, and a statistical analysis. Thank you. I think you have time for questions.
No? Given, until the time when we can have an artificial diet, and given the differences in royal jelly that we've seen, can you develop like a pre-screen to check the...
Yeah, that's what I intend to do. Yeah, that's. I already know a reliable source in China. I have used this one for 2 or 3 years, and they're very consistent. So even But I also want to test just to see what else are out there. And I do know one European study used raw jelly in Michigan, actually. And then they had 20% survival in the control. So, and I think that paper will have trouble being published just because you have so little power to detect anything with such a high mortality in the control. The question is, there are already standardized inputting proteins or pollens into larval cells and then returning the brood into the colony, and that seems to be very consistent. And why bother with a lab assay? As I mentioned in the introduction, the lab assay just have more control, and I think it's more believable. We don't really know. For example, there are so many unknowns. We don't know if nurses could remove proteins. I think there's no studies actually verified. If you put 100 microliter BT protein, how much do you recover from the larva? How much is eaten by the larva? Versus nurses is very sensitive. You know, I studied bees in my PhD, and we tried to add hexane extracts in different larva. They get all eaten. As soon as you smell something, you touch a larva with a brush, they get eaten next day. So you add in exotic substance into the hive. We don't know how much. Maybe they are all eaten by the larva, not consumed by nurses. But this is a question. It's a potential effect. So if you use this totally lab approach, then you're removing those possible artifacts. So. What's my difference to the other one? To the European method, okay. European method, it's very complicated. They use some dental gel or something on the bottom, and they want to weigh the larva. But I couldn't replicate the assay in my lab. And I think other labs in the US has tried to replicate it, cannot replicate it. I had probably 50% survival using that assay. The amount of larva food they put is simply not enough. They used 50 microliters, for example, per day, whereas we tested even 75 microliters per day. In the last 3 days, you have high mortality, and I think the assay is too complicated, and it's difficult to replicate. Yeah. I didn't understand your question. If the nurses are removing the food from the larva, then no. I think people have studied the BT pollen feeding to the whole colony or feeding to the bees. Of course, the larva actually do not receive a lot of pollen directly. They're eating raw jelly protein, which is secreted by the hypopharyngeal gland secretion and mixed with mandibular gland secretion. So the nurses are actually consuming, digesting the pollen and then producing protein to the larva. But the answer to your question is no, nobody has. We don't know. That's just the potential, as I said, potential to cause artifact. It could also be product dependent. So you could use E64, maybe the nurses do not remove it. And you use quiet protein, maybe nurses are sensitive and remove it. So then you'll be product dependent. So that's why it's better to have a total lab assay. I mean, I also published a study using the same assay she mentioned, using feeding larva directly, which is easier. So, but I still think this would be better, more reliable. So, just my opinion.